Houston Dynamo, Portland Timbers, Sporting Kansas, Los Angeles Galaxy, Beach Pass, this is your boys. Toronto FC, Real Salt Lake, this is my red, white, and blue. Chicago Fire, this is my anthem to you. Columbus Crew, FC Dallas, New York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. I know, a fantastic singer, and thank you very much for putting up with that, and more importantly, downloading Pitch Pass. It is the most wonderful time of year if you are an MLS fan, which you are because you downloaded this. Thank you for spreading the word. You see, like, I preemptively thanked you as if now it'll be subliminally planted in your brain to go spread the word about this podcast. PitchPass.com for more information on the show. And at PitchPass is where you follow us on Twitter. I mentioned PitchPass.com. It's a great place to go, not just for the podcast, but also the other articles and things that we post, including one of our main writers, Sebastian Salazar of Comcast Sportsnet. Houston will join us later on in the show to talk about Houston Dynamo's road to MLS playoffs and their upcoming match versus Montreal Impact. But first, we talk to the goalkeeper of the team that is waiting for the winner of Houston Dynamo versus Montreal Impact, and that would be New York Red Bulls. Luis Robles joins us right now on the show. Luis, welcome to Pitch Pass. How are you, sir?
Hi, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm very well. First, congratulations on the season and Supporters Shield. Let's get out of the way right off the bat. But the more important thing, Luis, how are you feeling? What is your health like right now?
In regards to my knee, I think the week's gone well. I just revealed that it was a grade one sprain, so that's kind of mild in terms of knee injuries. The last couple of days have just been treatment, and tomorrow I'll be back on the field.
Okay, so you're good to go.
Yeah. I mean, barring any setbacks, but I feel good.
I like that you're just able to take a knee sprain and just go, you know what, I'm fine. I'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that way, so.
This time of year,
we'll see what happens tomorrow.
Yeah, this time of year, I guess it's all hands on deck.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, definitely considering where we're at right now, going to the playoffs, but I want to make sure I'm in a good position and not compromising the team, but definitely want to be participating in.
I wanted to ask you because I was watching the match yesterday between Seattle and Colorado, and they cut a couple of times to the Portland Timbers coach, Caleb Porter, who was at the match. Worked out well for him. But it got me thinking about prepping and watching a game, which you will do this evening for Houston versus Montreal. How do you prepare for that? And I know you're just going to execute your game plan, but is a situation where you'll watch the match tonight just to pick up something on either team?
I don't think there's going to be any surprises since we've played both teams three times this season, but I guess my philosophy on watching an opponent is twofold. The first is I think it's important to know what they have on the field as far as the product goes, but then I don't want to watch too much because I feel like you end up psyching yourself out, like, oh, they've got this, and you overanalyze situations. So it's one thing to be aware. It's another thing to allow it to play too much into the equation of preparing for a match.
It's a good point. Will you watch the match at all, though, or will you try to do your best to watch it as,
absolutely,
a spectator?
I mean, I watch it from a spectator standpoint with the undertone of being aware of what's going on, but, I mean, it's two good teams with a lot on the line, so I think it should be a good match tonight.
Definitely. And before we get further into your preparations for the match, I want to take a look back. A number of media outlets have kind of reported the story of you and your wife in the car before the match. Could you just tell that story to the Pitch Pass audience?
I didn't realize that was the story.
Oh, it's a thing, Luis. It's a thing.
Yeah, okay. Well, my wife and I have this thing before every match when we pull into the parking lot to just pray. And we pray mostly to just be thankful for the opportunity to go out there and play. But this one was a little different and special because we were on the eve of us winning the Supporters Shield. So for us to be able to sit back and kind of take inventory of everything that's going on in the season has definitely left us a little emotional because 15 months ago, unless she convinced me to go make that phone call to the MLS, I mean, we could have been doing something completely different.
When you say when she convinced you and read a great article on you from the Wall Street Journal, which we'll link to this at pitchpass.com, about what happened after you were done in Germany, when you say your wife convinced you to call MLS, can you get a little more into that? Like, why did you have to be convinced? Was it a situation where you hadn't even considered MLS? And what did she say to kind of seal the deal for you to make that phone call?
Yeah, well, she was definitely the major influence, but of course I had family as well saying, hey, don't give up. And I was in a very discouraged state only because of the way things panned out. My last year in Germany was very difficult, and it was a situation I wouldn't wish for anyone to go through. But I was thinking that the transition would be a lot smoother than it was, and it wasn't. It seemed like every time we turned the corner and we were headed towards a deal or some sort of negotiation, something came into the mix that basically unwound the entire process. And so as we're in the middle of July, and I know that we had been trying a couple of months now, and for there to be zero progress, what had happened is I was working with a realtor, and he had offered me a position to basically be a partner in his office. And I thought it was a very lucrative position considering where he was in the market and his revenues. So I thought it was a good opportunity, and I remember coming home that day telling Kara about the conversation, and I thought this is something that we should pursue, but she right away said, no, I don't think this is something that you should do, because even though it has been difficult, I think you're going to regret it. And I felt at that moment that I was, and I felt like I was in a good place to make the transition to whatever was next in my life, especially because I've been hurt so many times in a period of 12 months, that for her to not only be empathetic and sympathetic about the entire situation, but as convincing as she was, I'm glad that she did. And for us, 15 months later, to be in that situation and to be in the car and giving thanks for everything that the Lord had given into our lives, I was just even more thankful for her because she stuck to it. And it was with that influence, it opened the door for the experience that we've had.
And not to be too mushy, but after the match was over against Chicago, how long did it take you to find her in the crowd?
Given the time frame, our son gets kind of cranky at that time. So I knew that she wouldn't be around the field. I knew that she would be in the box. And he's only 1 year old, so he could care less about what's going on. But obviously, when everything was said and done and we're headed home, it was a great moment. And it was definitely one of those moments I'll hold on to for a long time, because I look over her and I'm just grateful more than anything that for how supportive she's been, how influential she's been, and I just feel like looking at how our life has gone since we've been married, we've just been a team that no matter what happens, no matter what circumstance presents itself, we've gone about it together, and she's been supportive, and at times she's also been having to listen to me gripe and complain about why things aren't going the way that it should be, and the whole time, she's been great about it. So I feel like it's been us against the world, and I wouldn't do it with anyone else.
Well, here's what the only thing I will change when I license the movie rights, Luis, and that will be she will be pitch side and will be the first person you scoop in your arms as the credits roll, all right?
I'm sure she wouldn't mind if you changed that way, too.
Now, I had this whole list of questions for you as somebody who has played a U.S. men's national team member who has played overseas, coming back into the States, especially as a keeper, but a lot of them don't apply because of where or how your time in Germany ended. The one thing I would like to ask you about, because something that always is kind of, I don't want to say sticks in my craw as an MLS fan, but it kind of does, is the fact that you were playing in Germany, and when you were playing in Germany, I remember never having seen you play, just reading reports about you and thinking to myself, oh, we've got another national team keeper who is ready to step up. He plays in Germany. And it feels like since you've been back in the States, and now we can see you play, that we haven't talked as much about you being in the men's national team setup. Why do you think that is? As somebody who is overseas and kind of not being able to be seen, has more of a higher profile in the national team than somebody who we see every weekend?
Well, I think two things that played into my advantage 4 years ago was that I was really young. I was 24 years old. I was playing for a really good team that was having quite a bit of success. And anytime something like that happens, there's going to be more recognition. And so that was definitely playing to my advantage. Now, one thing that happened with the national team that ended up being a detriment is with me staying with the team at Gold Cup, I essentially lost my position. And so when I went back to Germany, I missed all the training camp, and we had a new head coach, and he just didn't give me a shot at it. So for for me to be on the radar of the national team and then immediately to go back to Germany and not play quickly took me off the radar. And since then, I don't think there has been much talk about it. And, I mean, rightly so. But in that regard, with the national team, I think that's something that, sure, you can have in the back of your mind, but it's not necessarily something that motivates me. And the reason I said that, and that may sound strange, but my focus is purely with the New York Red Bulls. I feel like I'm just one part in a big machine, and if the team does really well, then it's going to reflect well on me. But for our team to accomplish some of the things that we've done this year, it's been fun to be a part of. And so if that ends up parlaying into some opportunity, so be it. But it's not something that I can control, nor is it something that I stress too much about, because that's just – it's completely out of my control.
Yeah, and I see your
and
point.
I don't know if I answered your question, but I mean, that's just my general perspective for it.
No, you totally did, and I think, you know, as an MLS fan and a guy who wants the American League to be a successful league, I just think sometimes we take for granted the players that are playing in MLS because we see them all the time, and I don't know, maybe it is, whereas when you were playing over in Germany, we never saw you, and yet everybody was clamoring for you to be captain. I think, you know, and I would assume you agree, you're a better keeper now than you were at 24, and my whole thing is, I just don't want people to be taken for granted just because they're in MLS as opposed to not seen in Europe.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And one thing that I'll share with you as far as my perspective coming back is, I mean, 07, when I got drafted by DC, I think the league was in a completely different stage. And there was some underlying rumors of, is the league going to sustain itself? And that was really before Beckham came about and did some wonderful things for the league. But to come back 6 years later and see the type of product that MLS presented, it's phenomenal. And I can see why, when I was leaving, the amount of Germans that were interested in asking me questions about the MLS that I really couldn't answer because I didn't have any experience or know anything about the league, it's very attractive. Not only is it attractive because of the lifestyle that comes with living in America, but it's become a quality league. And I think that everyone from the inside and on the outside is optimistic about the direction that the league's going.
And another question that will be is unique to your situation, and that would be Mike Petke versus Hans Bacca. You've played under both guys. How important or how much of a reason for the success that you guys have had, and Mike Petke in particular, is from the fact that he knows the league so well?
I think it would be an unfair assessment for me to evaluate or compare or contrast the style of the coach, because I was only there for a couple months. And when I was there with Hans, it was towards the playoffs, so it could be a completely different situation than if I was there during preseason. But I will speak to a young coach and someone who's experienced the league. And there's definitely intricacies within the league that a foreigner would have no understanding about. And I think even looking at our general manager, Andy Roxburgh, it's taken him a better part of the season to understand allocation and reentry draft. I'm sure there's still things that he doesn't completely understand. But with that being said, he surrounded himself with the right people, and having Mike in charge, who does understand those things, and Ricardo Campos, who does understand those things, has helped us find the right players. And if you look at our team, just each position, there's so much depth. So they found ways to kind of work around all the different rules and loopholes that the MLS presents, and that's why we have been successful.
You grew up in Arizona. You played in Germany. How aware were you through the fan base of the, I don't want to say futility because now it's over, but the trophy-less case of first the Metro Stars into Red Bulls? And how important was it for you guys to take that off of the weight of the franchise and, more importantly, the fans?
I was not aware of it until this season. It actually kind of blew my mind because I knew that the Metro Stars was one of the original franchises, that they were trophyless. And it wasn't on our radar until towards the end. Mike did a good job, our captain did a good job of making sure that we're focused each and every week at the task at hand. So it was not until the last couple weeks that it really become a topic of conversation. And I think, I mean, I don't know what it is from a journalist standpoint, but we still surprise a lot of people because up until the last 2 or 3 weeks, I'm pretty sure everyone was still talking about Portland and Seattle and Kansas City. So I think that that's also one of our strengths, is because of our leadership, we're able to take each task week by week and not get too overwhelmed with the supporter shield or the MLS Cup or the playoffs. And Mike made it very clear from the very beginning that our goal is to make the playoffs. And once we accomplished that, there was a mild celebration. And then towards the end, our goal is to win the supporter shield because the opportunity presented itself.
Did you feel it in Red Bull Arena, that weight lifted, or did it feel just like a celebration of a supporter shield, or did it feel like more?
Well, our fans definitely involved us in their sigh of relief, so I felt like there was some sort of weight lifted, but just like any good fan, right away they're like, okay, this means nothing unless you win an MLS Cup, so it was short-lived, and I think it deservedly should be short-lived because the season isn't done yet, and I think everyone in the locker room feels like we have a great opportunity to add to that.
And this is where MLS is different from a lot of leagues throughout the world, in that you won the Supporter Shield to lift that trophy, that plate, for a lot of teams would be the culmination of a season. How hard was it, or how long did it take you guys to have that celebration and then to go, okay, now it's job two to do. Part two starts in a week. We've got to start getting ready for that.
I mean, I'd be lying to you if we had a big celebration. The celebration consisted of everything that you saw post-game, because everyone does understand that there's still more to the season. We qualified for the playoffs. We have the number one seed, and we're not necessarily satisfied or complacent with what we've accomplished so far. There's still more to be done, and I think that's the right mindset to have going into the playoffs.
Last thing before you go, Luis, and thank you very much for the time. I appreciate it. I am trying to be a fantasy football commissioner for next season. What do I need to do to get myself the number one pick?
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. Well, supposedly you have to cheat.
Yeah.
And I was not prepared for this question, but I've been receiving that comment each and every week. And there was actually a different thing we had going on. We had this pick'em week, and everyone was involved, staff, coaches, backroom staff, all the players. And so we started off with about 50 people, and I was the quote-unquote commissioner for that league as well. And so I'm getting it from two ends, whether it's fantasy football or the Pick'em League. And it was funny because after the what game was it? It was Houston. We just beat Houston, and I felt like there was a bigger celebration within the locker room that my team was actually out and I was out of the Pick'em League than us beating Houston 3-0. So as you can sort of tell, there is a sort of jeering at me all season only because I am the commissioner of those things. And for me to get AP, obviously there's a hint of conspiracy or cheating, but I'll tell you right now, I didn't do anything. I am as clean as they come. So. Now, with that being said, Eric Alexander is in the car with me, and he's snickering because he understands that I probably waited the lottery as well. So
the chances of you being commissioner of either league next year are at what percent now, Luis? 10%?
I think they're very high. I think people are satisfied with what's going on, and for me to be deemed commissioner in the first place means that people think that I'm responsible. So I'll take the scrutiny that comes with it, but I feel like I've handled myself well.
Yes, and I would agree with that. Thank you very much, Luis. Good luck in your match this weekend. We'll find out who you're going to play tonight, but thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you as well.
No disrespect to any of the players that we've had on Pitch Pass over the course of this show, but I don't know. You heard it. To me, Luis Robles is one of the more thoughtful athletes that I have ever spoken to. You get the feeling that when you ask him a question, he really takes a minute or a second to get his thoughts together before he gives an answer. And if he doesn't feel comfortable giving an answer, he says so. And I appreciate that. Really good conversation. As a DC United fan, it was hard to say that was a really good conversation with New York Red Bulls keeper and guy who turned down DC United, Luis Robles. Let's continue on with another DC United fan who is now transplanted, living in Houston, working for Comcast Sportsnet Houston. He covers the Dynamo as they get ready for their match this evening versus Montreal Impact. I'm talking about our good friend Sebastian Salazar. He joins us now on Pitch Pass. Sebby, how are you, my friend?
Good, good, very good. Busy time of year, busy on the local front, busy everywhere. So... no complaints here, man. Great time to be involved with MLS.
Now, look, we'll focus in on the Dynamo Impact match because you followed the Dynamo day-to-day with Comcast Sportsnet Houston, but I do want to get your thoughts on some of the other matches as well. Well, first off, are you going to be on the national platform for the match on Thursday? Because I know they picked up the feed for NBC Sportsnet. Are you going to be part of that?
Yeah, so how we're going to do it is we will produce the broadcast as we usually would for CSN Houston, and then NBC Sports Network is just going to simulcast it nationally. So it'll be a pretty cool opportunity for us to get out onto the national platform. And yeah, it's a great show. We got Glenn Davis, who does games for ESPN
yep.
and NBC in the past. We got Eddie Robinson, who's
awesome.
A lot of fun. So it's a pretty good team, and yeah, I will be involved. They'll sneak me in there somehow.
I always say this when we tweet it out, but Eddie Robinson, to me, the best of the color guys that hasn't made the step up nationally yet, and definitely put him on the radar because you will be hearing from him. I think he's fantastic on the broadcast.
I will pass that along, and I totally agree, man. I think Eddie has that kind of folksy charm. You know, he's from the Carolinas, but he's bounced all around. He's beloved here in Houston. But he's not afraid to tell it like it is. You know, it's been an up-and-down year for the Dynamo, and I think a lot of guys, as close as Eddie is maybe to an organization or a locker room, may have tried to pull some punches. But Eddie has not. You know, he says what needs to be said, but obviously he has great insight into that locker room, and I think it really comes through on our shows.
Well, you mentioned the up-and-down nature of the Dynamo. Let's get into the match because, since August on this show, I've been kind of trumpeting Houston's just lying in wait, getting ready for the playoffs. And once they make the playoffs, that's the team you want to look out for because they've done it so often in the past. And they left it till the very, very, very end, actually took their own destiny out of their hands with some results. But they're in. And now I got to ask you, Sebi, is this the team or is this a team much like in past seasons where you just worry about pulling Dynamo as your matchup or is this a different incarnation of the Dynamo?
You know, I don't know that it's quite the team it was a year ago. I think that team had some elements that this team doesn't, namely speed, you know, up top. Giles Barnes isn't slow. He can get places in a hurry. He can get behind defenses, but it's not like a Kalen Carr or even a Matt Kanji that really stretches out a midfield. And when you've got Boniek Garcia, Brad Davis, those are guys that can be dangerous in tight quarters, but if you really give them an extra yard and a half or an extra half second to pick out a ball, that's when you really unlock those guys. And they haven't been able to do that this year, I think in large part because they don't maybe have that burner to really stretch a back line, make a back line, take another 5-10 yards of a more conservative posture.
Well,
I think it's just one of those situations where they don't necessarily have the pop. They've still got all the pieces, though.
What's the situation in the back? Because to me, that's been the more troubling aspect. Giles Barnes' emergence kind of offsets what you said, and you're on the ground, so I'm going to defer to you. But to me, the back line has been the reason that I kind of am more concerned about the Dynamo's playoff chances than I have been in the past.
Sure, and it's not going to be any better. I mean, Jermaine Taylor's out for the rest of the postseason, so Eric Bruner now has to step in. And, you know, Bruner's the guy that has a lot of experience in this league that Dominic Kinnear had an eye on for quite a while, finally was able to bring him in this offseason. But at the same time, he's not, you know, part of that starting duo for a reason. It's always been Jermaine and Bobby Boswell. And, you know, I think there's been some injuries. There's been some aging. I mean, you throw in Kofi Sarkodie, he's kind of the young buck in that line. But all the other three of that kind of mainstay back four for Houston isn't on the younger side of their career, their experience, veterans. Even a guy like Corey Ash has been in the league for a while. So I just think you're getting some age. And truthfully, you know, defending is a team chore. And I think sometimes we see a back line get picked apart and we're quick to say, oh, man, well, the back four are having issues. But I think, you know, what we hear kind of the constant rhetoric and talk out of the Dynamo camp is that, you know, those issues have started in midfield. They've started even up top with some of the defending in the shape. And it has actually tightened up down the stretch here. Tally Hall, the numbers have been pretty much the same. Tally Hall was really lights out for the first 4 or 5 months of the season. He still played well, but hasn't been called on quite as much to kind of do the standing on your head routine as he had through April, May, June, July.
But that's the good thing, though. And to me, that was always the thing that made the Dynamo the fearsome team they have been, especially the last 2 years, is the back line's always been solid. And then the times where they weren't solid, Tally Hall would just stand on his head and make the dynamic save. And it feels like now he's being called in to make more saves, in which case he's not going to make as many. And then we get into trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I really have to point out that he has not, over the last few months, been as critical. I think a lot of that comes back to Ricardo Clark. I mean, Ricardo Clark missed substantial time. When he got back and when they figured out that he and Warren Cravell were kind of the go-to, you know, space eaters in midfield, I shouldn't even say space eaters because that has like a negative connotation that maybe Rico's not that good on the ball. He's getting forward quite a bit now for this team. But they really took a lot of the pressure off that back line. But that's the role that any holding central midfielder plays on any team. I mean, that's kind of the responsibility. So it's not to say that Rico's covering for their weaknesses. I actually think, you know, when he wasn't around, there just wasn't as much work being generated, as much space being covered, you know, right in the middle of that Dynamo, you know, center midfield.
I don't know if it was you that said this or someone else, but once it was pointed out to me, I did start to think about it more. How much has Andrew Driver's injury or absence affected what they've been able to do the last few months?
I don't know. There was a stretch where there was this tantalizing idea of getting Brad Davis and Boniek Garcia and Andrew Driver all on the field at the same time. And there were a few opportunities where the Dynamo did it, and I have to tell you, it didn't work. It didn't really come together as much as you would think that it did. They tried to move Brad into the middle. They tried to move Boniek into the middle. I know I was talking to Glenn Davis, and he knows this team and this organization as well as anybody, and, you know, talking about kind of the roles and how you use your outside midfielders. And you know, Andrew, when he got hurt, was playing really well, was making plays. And really, you know, even once he's gotten healthy, and he's healthy, I don't know that he's 90 minutes fit, but he's playing, he just doesn't seem to have that same kind of first step burst to get around guys. And I think a little bit, too, the book is out on Andrew Driver. You know, he's such a left foot dominant, heavy player that eventually, you know, teams are doing video scouting, and you can sense that when guys get in a one-on-one matchup with Driver, they know that the really their only play is to push him to his right. He can still surge forward and be dangerous, but it's nothing compared to what he can do with that left foot.
All right, well, then let me go to another way. If they had to do it again, would they have pulled the trigger on that Adam Moffat deal?
I think so. I think the Adam Moffat deal, you know, you have to look at the totality of the Adam Moffat deal. Really, it's a move as much for next year in cap space as anything else. The Dynamo put a lot of chips into this year. They took a lot of money onto this year's cap and really rolled the dice that the team had come so close that this was the group that would eventually get over the hump. And because of that, next year's cap situation was going to be extremely dire. So they had to make a move. They weren't going to be able to bring Adam back. Carrasco, Servando Carrasco, is an option that, you know, is much cheaper. He's probably not going to give you the minutes that Adam did. But the truth is, when Ricardo Clark came back, and the team put a lot of faith in Ricardo, they said, okay, you're back, you're healthy, and we trust that you'll stay healthy. And they rolled the dice a little bit. Moffitt became expendable. And then it also was huge that Warren Cravell could step up the way he did. I mean, if Warren doesn't step up, I may be singing a different tune, because his emergence alongside Ricardo Clark has really been the difference. And that part of the field, I would almost say, has gotten better since the trade, simply because Ricardo Clark is playing at a level that he had not played at all year.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And that is the other side of the coin, is the reason why it made a Moffitt expendable. All right, let's ask it this way then. Is that the best they could have gotten for Adam Moffitt? And it's no offense to Carrasco, but you just wonder, all right, if they did need a burner, why wouldn't you take a chance on a younger striker if there was one available? Is that the best they could do to fill that need?
I think the move, you again have to go back to money. I think, would they have preferred maybe a fast wing type player? Maybe. I don't know that for sure. It would seem to fit their needs. but I don't know that you could get that guy at the number that Carrasco is going to make and still make it work for next year. I mean, they wanted to improve the cap situation for next year. That was a primary goal of the trade, which they did. And they wanted to not sacrifice as much this year. And they accomplished both with bringing in Carrasco. And I actually think he's a guy that could stick here in Houston, just in terms of his attitude, the way he fits into the locker room, and his versatility in midfield. Dom really likes guys that he can move around. And, you know, Carrasco's a guy that can eat up a lot of space, but is pretty comfortable on the ball in that holding midfield role. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him stick around and maybe eventually become an Adam Moffat-type player, in which case it worked out perfectly.
Okay, so then you mentioned the lack of speed up top, or at least the blazing lack of speed. Did the Dynamo figure at this point in the season that Cummings and Carr would, if not be all the way back, at least between the two of them, give one of them an option to be that burner? And how big of a loss is it that neither of them have emerged?
Roach, they didn't figure it. They banked on it. And it wasn't this time of season. It was 3 or 4 months ago. You know, Cummings just never got healthy. And now that he's I still don't know that he's Omar Cummings 2011 healthy. I don't know that he'll ever get back to that. But even, you know, just watching the CONCACAF Champions League game the other night against Arabe Unido, you know, he does not look comfortable in front of goal. He doesn't look like a guy that is riding a wave of confidence. Some of that surely is rust, right? He hasn't played. But this is a guy that has lit up MLS backfields for a long, long time. And, you know, he has not delivered on what they paid for or on what they thought they were going to get. The Kalen Carr thing was always trickier, right? He did his ACL on December 1st, had surgery, I think, within a month. You know, even on the right side of that, let's say you give him a 9 month time for recovery. That means he's back on the field in September, working towards game shape. I don't know how much they really held out hope for Kalen. I think maybe there was some hope, but not a lot of expectations. And Kalen really tried to push through. I mean, in late August, he was training every day. He had some setbacks with his knee because he was pushing it so hard. And then the team kind of started to find their rhythm again. Playing time became more scarce. And now that Kalen's pretty much, you know, back to health, it's tough even to break into the 18 because there are a lot of options there. There's guys like Jason Johnson. There are options. But there hasn't been a guy that's really stepped up and pushed Giles Barnes or Will Bruin. Those two guys have been your default starters at forward despite up and down stretches. I mean, that's what they've been. They've been really inconsistent. When it's good, it's good. When it's not, you know, there are no goals to be found between those two.
And this is the surprising thing as you go back and you look over and you think to yourself, okay, this isn't the vintage Dynamo teams of the past that have come on in September and October and then made their run in MLS playoffs. But you look at the results, at least in league, 4-1-2 over the course of the last month and a half, 2 months. That's not a bad run of form at all. But then you factor in the disappointment of CONCACAF Champions League, and that's where I think you think to yourself, oh, well, wait, this isn't the vintage team. But the results don't actually bear that out fully.
Well, I would disagree. I would say there's some results that bear that this is not the vintage Dynamo team. I mean, they have not been dominant at home. You know, they're winning. They're getting some results. But, I mean, New York came in here and won 3-0. They came in here and won 4-1. I mean, those are results that Houston has never suffered before here in Houston. So there's definitely something different about this group. The dominance at home is not what it once was. And maybe there's a way that you can reestablish that. But Tally Hall was talking about it the other day. Like that's a month-long, year-long thing that you look to establish. Now, if they string together some results here at BBVA Compass Stadium over the next couple of weeks, people might start buying back into that mystique. But right now, if you've watched what New York has done the last 2 times they've come down here, you're not buying into the BBVA mystique. You're not scared to come down here. And I think for a long time, if you put the Dynamo, the playoffs, and a game in Houston in front of somebody, it made them tremble a little bit. I don't get that same sense around the league.
Okay, so does that make the playoff game in BBVA versus Montreal less impactful, for lack of a better term to put it, for the Dynamo than it would have been in years past?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think you'd rather be in Houston only because Montreal is so bad on the road, right? I mean, it's one thing that maybe BBVA isn't as intimidating as it used to be, but Montreal is still not good away from home. And I think the last time they came here, you know, that kind of played itself out. Montreal is not the team that you know, dismantled Houston 5-0 earlier this summer. I mean, that's kind of a distant memory. And the last time they played here, Houston really had the better of the run of play. Granted, Montreal was missing a lot of people. But I think the point is you have to look at this team. They ought to be the favorite Thursday night. But when you start talking about going up against the New Yorks and having to go to Kansas City, that's when I think, you know, this team is going to have some really special performances from guys that have maybe not delivered special performances yet this year to survive those type of matchups. 180 minutes against New York is going to be very difficult for this team.
All right, so last thing then, because, you know, I don't know if anybody's gotten the vibe listening to this. It's just, there's nothing you can put your finger on as to this Dynamo team. And, you know, you kind of alluded to the age question. This isn't an old team. This is a team, you know, you look at Boswell, he's early, mid-30s. You look at the same thing with Ricardo Clark. But the rest of the team isn't old. So is it just a matter of the reason? And then that's why you look at the guys and you go, this is the spine of this team is the same as it's been the last 3 years. So is it just a matter of this team is a little more older than we think they are? They've got a little more miles than guys who are their age would normally have?
You know, when you've seen a team play together for so long, you tend to think of them as older, like as you've said, than maybe they are on paper. I just don't know that this team has ever at any point this season flashed a great game of soccer. And to me, you know, that's maybe the story of the 2013 Houston Dynamo is that they never really hit potential. They never hit potential with Kalen Carr. They never hit it with Omar Cummings. And they've kind of plodded along. They've got enough talent to be a very good team. And so they win the games they're supposed to win, and they win some games that maybe say, okay, that's a pretty impressive result. And every once in a while, they'll beat DC United 4-0, or they'll beat Chivas USA 5-1. But against a really good team, I don't know that I've seen them have a great game yet. And that's what I keep coming back to with this team. Whether it's international call-ups and injuries, this has been a season disrupted for Houston. They've never really gotten in sync. They've only now settled on an 11, and that 11 does not include an in-form striker that you can count on in the way that you would count on a Keane, De Vio, even an Henry, these guys that you say are proven late-season goal scorers. Will Bruin had a heck of a run last year. I don't know if he can duplicate that. Giles Barnes has scored some goals, but again, it's 2 weeks on, 3 weeks off, 2 weeks on, 3 weeks off. So I think every year we assume that the Dynamo will be poised for a great run, and maybe they have that in them this year. I'm not saying they don't. They definitely have a chip on the shoulder, and they're playing that up again, that they're being counted out. But I believe in what I've seen, and I've not seen this team yet play to the level that puts them, in my mind, in an Eastern Conference final.
You've painted some doom and gloom, but then on the other side, we've talked about the impact. We talked about their form recently. We've talked about their road form. I don't think not having Nesta is as big a deal as others are saying. To me, and I talked to Amanda Stein, who covers the impact earlier this month, and it was a situation where it almost felt like he had already checked out as saying, all right, this is the end of me, and I'm fine. So I don't think losing him or not having him is a problem for the Dynamo or for the impact. What do you foresee Thursday in Houston?
I see a quick start from the Dynamo. I really do think they kind of get off on this one. You can say what you want about Nesta, but I mean, with him in the lineup, they've won 12 of their 14 games, and without him, they've only won twice. So 12 of their 14 wins, you know. So I mean, they do better with him in there. This Lefebvre kid, the academy product, you know, probably gives you more side-to-side cover than Nesta does. But I don't know that you're better off. You know, I still give a center back, and I say a center back's best quality is often his brain. And you're just not going to find a better brain than Nesta.
True.
And Nesta has played extremely well, especially in that game 5-0 when the Dynamo lost up there. I mean, it was 5-0, and it felt like 5-0 for a long time. It wasn't one of those games that there was some late scoring, but didn't get out of hand late. Montreal dominated, in large part was because of how he organized that defense and how little breakthrough the Dynamo got all night. So, but I think the Dynamo win this game. I think they're at home. The only way I see this maybe panning out differently, and it's something that developed late in the game, obviously anytime Marco Devaio is on the field, if he grabs a goal early on, it changes everything, right? But Andrew Wenger really created issues for the Dynamo when they played here in October, in early October. He got behind the Dynamo defense after coming off the bench two or three times, but he couldn't finish. If he can find a finishing touch, he could really be a difference maker in this game because his speed really, really hurt the Dynamo when they last played here at BBVA Compass Stadium, and he could be kind of an X factor to watch out for.
I'd like to get you back on in a couple of weeks as we start whittling down the teams to get a more focused prediction. But before I let you go, just as we go into the playoffs, what team to you is the standout team for MLS Cup this year?
Everybody says, like, you got to respect LA, right? It's so cliched. Well, until they don't win.
Yeah.
And like, my brain agrees with that, but, like, screw it. I just can't say LA because everyone else is saying it. I just really like Real Salt Lake. I watched them, and I like what they do. I like how they move the ball. I like, you know, having heard Jason Christ kind of describe what he does. You know, one of the cool things about doing these NBC games is you have these production meetings and you get to talk to the coaches kind of off the record about why they do what they do and how they see the game. I just really think they're well run, and I think that matters in elimination soccer. And I think they have a lot of options so that if they get into a matchup that's not working 20 minutes in, they can either tactically change something or from personnel change something. And I think this is a run. You throw in the fact that they've got one of the hottest goalies in the league, and I really like RSL to make some noise in the West and eventually take it all. It's hard to go against LA. It's really hard to go against New York, especially when I've seen what they've done, like I said, in their two visits to Houston. But I just, at the end of the day, man, I've got to go with the team that's impressed me the most, and RSL's been that team.
I like that because you're right. Everybody is going LA. But the same reason why you really can't go Dynamo, you should be able to say the same thing about LA, is that, okay, just because they've done it in the past doesn't mean that this is a vintage Galaxy team. And the other side of the coin is everybody's going Red Bulls because, naturally, they are the Supporter Shield winner, so they probably are the prohibitive favorite going in. I like that you went a little bit off board, not crazy, but a little bit off board with your Real Salt Lake pick.
Yeah, I don't think taking Real Salt Lake as MLS Cup pick is going far off the board, right? But I just, we keep, and it's the same with LA and Houston because of the last two off seasons. I think with LA, you can still count on some things. You can count on guys to play at a certain level that you don't have those guys producing in Houston. Giles Barnes has had a great season, but you can't compare it to what Robbie Keane has done. You know, Brad Davis has had a good season, but you can't compare it to what you expect from Landon Donovan. And so I think those differences make the difference between, I get it why people have a lot of confidence in LA. And I would understand why people have confidence in Houston. I just wouldn't go overboard with it based on what we've seen the last 6 months.
Yeah, but it's just interesting because the thoughtful pick is Red Bulls because of the form they're in and because of what they just won. You're never going to go wrong picking Galaxy after back-to-back cups. The sexy pick is Portland because of what they've done. So in a way, even though it's a common sense pick to go Salt Lake, it is an under-the-radar kind of pick because of all the other options that are out there.
Yeah, I mean, Real Salt Lake, basically, like I said, I just really come back to the way they play and their versatility. I think in tournament knockout soccer, you have to have a coach that's willing to make quick moves, and you have to have flexibility in your roster to change what you're doing in case a matchup gets out of hand. You can't afford a bad 45 minutes. If you're down 3-0, as we've seen happen, whatever happens on the road leg, you're done. So I just really like the fact that I think they can change on the fly. I've seen them do it live. I've seen them start a game one way, change it, and be very effective in that change. And that's a trump card that I don't know that everybody else is playing with.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Sebby. Thank you so much. And again, we'll talk to you a little bit later on, whether the Dynamo are in or out for the MLS playoffs, just to get an overview as we move ahead. Thanks, man.
No problem. Anytime, Rhodes.
Show information, go to pitchpass.com.